Welcome to the I3 podcast, hosted by the Staff Development and Training Division of the South Carolina Department of Social Services. Our I3 podcast is a space where we as social service professionals can imagine, ideate, and discuss innovative ways to improve policy, practice, and the culture within our profession. If you have a passion for, or you feel called to serve others, then the I3 podcast is a place for you to learn, grow, and explore creative possibilities that could help improve the way in which you help others. With that said, I invite you to be present during our time together and allow your creative energy to flow as we discuss various topics in the field of social services. Hello, this is Dr. Gary James, and I'd like to welcome you to today's episode of our I3 podcast. Today, we have a very special guest who has a passion for the well-being of our workforce, and that's none other than Dr. Susan Meyer. Dr. Meyer is the South Carolina Department of Social Services Program Manager of Employee Trauma Support and also the Employee Assistance Program, or affectionately known as EAP Coordinator. The areas that Dr. Meyer provides oversight for is critically important for each member of our agency and our families, as she helps to provide access to resources that can assist us to remain whole while we assist others during their time of crisis. As a continuation of our conversation from our last episode with Dr. Anita Ketpal on the topic of self-care and specifically mindfulness, I thought that having a follow-up conversation with Dr. Meyer would be beneficial, as she'll share more information on how we as human service professionals can take better care of ourselves. Today, Dr. Meyer is going to share a little bit about her role in trauma support and the agency's employee assistance program. So, Dr. Meyer, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. And let's go ahead and dive right in. When you first started working with the Department of Social Services, you worked in an area known as trauma support. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what that entailed?
Yeah, when I first came to DSS, I came as a trauma support manager, and I was to oversee like a team of about, there was like 25 trauma support team members. Mm-hmm. And our job was to provide critical incident stress debriefings and diffusings to employees who handle critical incidents such as child fatalities, near fatalities, homicides, suicides, whatever type of critical incident. We were to go in, assist them with just processing what had taken place.
Right. And how often would you do that? I mean, you talked about child fatalities and those types of things. How prevalent was that particular assignment for you?
Well, when I first came, I think it was like my second day I got called out for a child fatality. Mm-hmm. So it came quick. I really wasn't sure what I was doing. I had training in critical incident up in Pennsylvania, but I had never been trained down here. Mm-hmm. And I knew how to handle them, but I just kind of felt not sure, I guess, at first.
Right.
I would say on average, in the beginning, I would say we were getting about roughly between 25 and 30 critical incidents a month. And now they have revised the level of critical incidents. So it's not, now we only handle the most critical. We don't handle low-level incidents that may not traumatize an employee as much as like a child fatality or a suicide.
Okay. I am so thankful that you're here, because I've been in this profession for so many years and we rarely had any type of support. We were just tasked with doing the job to care for others, yet we never took time to look at how that impacted ourselves, our work, and how our ability to actually care for others. So I'm just so thankful that you're here with us. You mentioned a couple of things. Let's talk about the critical incident stress debriefings and diffusing, or the CISD. Mm-hmm. Why does DSS provide critical incident stress debriefings and diffusing for our staff?
Well, the most important thing before we go on to the question is I wanted to mention that all of the team members have been trained by the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation. Okay. Because for me, it's vitally important that when you do a debriefing with a person, you've got to know what you're doing, because you can make things worse if you don't do it in the correct manner. The critical incident debriefing is we meet usually in groups with the people who have been impacted. Sometimes some people want to meet individually, but the goal of the group is to have them process, to talk about what took place, what their thoughts were, what their feelings were, what was the emotional reactions they were feeling. We try to get them to talk about it and process it and try to, like, in a sense, work it out of their system, to take time to just let it out. Mm-hmm. And our job is to try to help them in doing that.
Yes, that's great. So the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation was the provider for the training.
Yeah.
And I see that you mentioned that they do have annual refreshers. What do those refreshers entail?
Well, the thing is that I want to be as current, and all of our team members, we all want the same thing. We want to be our best. So when we're going to do this, every year we have, through the International Critical Incident Foundation, we have a refresher with whatever's going on, any changes, anything new. And it's good for all the team members, because sometimes team members in outlying areas, I may not call upon them very often to do a defusing or debriefing. It's good to have that refresher so everybody gets to practice doing debriefings, and so that they feel comfortable when they're going into a critical incident and trying to assist people. We have to be at ease and try to help them to be at ease.
Sure. I think that's critically important to stay sharp when you're trying to help individuals debrief and decompress when dealing with very traumatic situations that we deal with on a daily basis.
And the most important thing is that we want to reduce the risk of long-term psychological problems because by allowing them to talk about it and letting them know what to expect, because a lot of times people have this emotional overload from the critical incident. They might go home and have their chills, or they might not be able to sleep, or have nightmares, or have intrusive thoughts. I mean, there's so many different reactions, and you know, everyone has different reactions. We try to prepare them after they talk about it, and we discuss it, and we process what took place. Then we try to help them to understand that these are the types of reactions you may have, so that they know they're not falling apart.
Right.
This is a normal reaction to a very abnormal thing.
Yes.
In research, the most important reason for me is that when we provide these debriefings, research has shown over and over that the debriefings will lower the level of stress and trauma to the person, and it actually will diminish the secondary traumatic response that they may have had they not had the debriefing. And the bad thing about secondary trauma is that it's cumulative. So if you have a child fatality, and this happens, you had a child fatality today, and we come in and do a debriefing, well, heck, next week you might have like a serious near fatality. It's like it never stops. They keep coming in. We have to help them to process those, because if they just keep shoving each of those incidents down, like suppressing them, and that's when they're going to have major psychological issues.
So this is absolutely fantastic, the work that you all are doing. We talk so many times about the trauma and being trauma-informed and the trauma that our clients, those that we serve, are impacted by. Rarely have we talked about the secondary trauma or the feeling of being overwhelmed or the experiences of our case managers and supervisors and others that are directly responsible for caring for individuals that are traumatized, and how that secondary trauma is a very real thing, overwhelming issue that needs and deserves our undivided attention. These critical incident stress debriefings and defusing sessions are just so very important to help individuals develop proper coping skills, because we know that there are improper coping skills, self-medicating and those types of things to try to get over incidents and experiences. But these debriefings and these defusing sessions are really providing that tool or that coping mechanism for individuals to decompress, so to speak, and to relieve themselves of the secondary trauma.
Absolutely. A secondary trauma, and like I said, post-traumatic stress disorder, if you don't address the secondary trauma, then it gets worse to the post-traumatic level. And it really impacts a person's quality of life. It impacts their families, their friends. I mean, begin to self-isolate. They begin to withdraw from doing their normal activities. I mean, it really puts them, I just can't even, it's just like they're diminished down to, it really does impact it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just stressful, bottom line. It's stressful, and it can be debilitating if not properly cared for.
The anxiety, depression, I mean, it really can.
Yes, and we just put so much, because of society's problems, we just put so much on ourselves to do the best that we can each and every time without caring for ourselves. So that kind of leads me to my next question for you. So we've talked a little bit about our workforce who experience traumatic events daily. And typically we think of those we serve as having experienced trauma. But very rarely, as I said earlier, do we think of ourselves or our staff. Mm-hmm. What are some of the long-term psychological problems that you've either observed or that you know about that are related to the work that we do as an agency?
Well, like I said, secondary traumatic stress is what will happen if you don't deal with it right away. And what happens is that when you develop secondary traumatic stress and you start to have all these symptoms like not sleeping, intrusive thoughts, nightmares, anxiety. I mean, we have employees having panic attacks because our employees, not only do they witness like child fatalities, but they go out every day and they go into people's homes. Yes. They might be taking their children away from them. The people, when they go to that home, they're not receptive to our DSS workers. Oh. And I mean, really, they are literally risking their lives when they go out every day. I mean, we've had people who have been harmed, threatened, real life experiences that they have. So it is very traumatizing, and it has a number of different negative impacts on their psychological and physical well-being.
Right. Secondary trauma stress is a topic that has become somewhat in vogue. Can you explain a little bit about how secondary trauma stress actually impacts our DSS employees and how, more so, how prevalent is that in the work that we do? Because I want our audience to understand that this is not something that happens periodically.
Well, the prevalence is based on all the literature. They say that it's roughly about 50% of child welfare workers are at high risk for secondary trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, that's, they're saying up to 50%, but a lot of the different research studies, one found that like 30% of child welfare workers were at a clinical level of emotional distress. Mm. So that's clinical level. And then they said 34% met the criteria for PTSD. Now, we all know PTSD is what soldiers get when they go into battle.
Yes.
When their lives are at risk and they're shooting others and they're seeing people die, our employees are dealing with the same symptoms mm-hmm. as these soldiers on the front line.
Yes. I saw a quote, and I'm going to have to try to find it, where it said that other than our fellow Americans that serve in the military, certainly thankful, and we want to bless them as much as we possibly can, but secondly, behind them are case managers within child welfare in terms of stress and PTSD because of the work that we do.
Yes.
And I'll have to find that quote, but that is an alarming quote to me because there's nothing more damaging than being on the front lines in a military war. But second behind that is case manager work.
Well, the thing too is for me, it's our empathy. You feel that child's pain. You absorb that child's pain. You absorb that trauma. So then once you absorb it, like to deal with those emotions, those emotional overload. But the way it impacts our agency, and this is what I try to tell people when we do the debriefings or when I give talks on secondary trauma, is that if you don't take care of you and your well-being mm-hmm. and you're at your top peak abilities, then you are really taking away from the work that you do. If you have secondary trauma and you have all these symptoms like not sleeping, not eating right, withdrawal from others, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, you cannot provide an optimum level of service to employees because you're not at your best.
Right.
So really, it's almost like they need to practice self-care and well-being because it is vital to them because it overflows into the work that they do. And the sad thing is, and it really bothers me the most, is that so many people, when I talk with them, they care about their children. They love their job. They want to do good. And then after so long at the agency, they'll say, I can't take it anymore.
Right.
I have to do your best, but it's never enough. So then they ultimately leave the agency.
Yes.
And that is, you know, not only is it detrimental to the agency because we lose workers and then we're short staffed. It's been shown through research. It is very detrimental to the children, too, because they don't have that continuity of service. And they find that as our turnover rate goes up, so does our length of time that children stay in our system.
Yes.
So turnover has a direct impact on the people we serve also, and not to mention the cost. And so all that training, all that money, and then plus two, it's all the sadness that they had to endure. And they say a lot of times when they leave child welfare, they don't want to go into any social work. They want to leave the helping field because they have been so impacted. Mm-hmm. It's really a shame.
It's challenging on multiple levels. It's challenging. You mentioned the turnover that impacts us financially, because I think to replace a child welfare case manager is about 1.5 times their salary.
Exactly. It is.
And then the permanency that is lost between that case manager and that child or that youth causes another level of trauma.
My goodness, it does.
But you're looking at turnover. Imagine how much trauma is really being forced onto that child, those families, those youth, because of the turnover. And I don't think the public at large really understands the tremendous amount of work and effort that we put into caring for their issues. It's not like our agency created these issues. We're dealing with societal issues, and we're doing the best that we can. But a lot of people are just impacted so much that they leave the agency, they leave the profession to do something else because it's just too much.
And it's a shame because we have such qualified, caring people. It's just so sad to see them leave the agency.
Yeah, but the beautiful part about it is the fact that you have now implemented some of the tools and resources and practices that can help retain individuals and help them heal.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. It's about helping all of us heal from what we face each and every day, not just our clients, but ourselves.
Yes.
So I want to shift the conversation just a little bit to talk about some of the way that you have imagined bringing in some of the resources that have truly, I would say, transformed the way that we care for our workforce. If you would share with us what went into your thought process of bringing our employee assistance program to our workforce.
Like I said, I had my first child fatality on the second day I came. And within the first couple of weeks, I don't really remember how many, but I know I went out to handle a fatality and there was a couple workers who were involved with the fatality. And a part of a critical incident debriefing is, it's not only you trying to have them process the incident and have them understand what to expect as a result of the incident. My job is also to triage the people who is going to need additional services. If you are a person who, say, you had a suicide in your family, and then say you go out and you have to handle a suicide of a teenager, well, then you're like getting a double whammy in a sense, not only dealing with that child's fatality, which is a horrendous thing in the first place, it's like a trigger. It takes you back to the suicide that you may had years prior.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're dealing with two suicides.
Right.
They really need help. And so in this case, this young person could not handle. She went to the coroner's review and seen graphic things.
Sure.
We've corrected that situation. But anyways, she told me she was going to leave. She wanted to leave the agency, but she couldn't afford to.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I said, well, you know, maybe you could consider switching to another department. She needed the money. And I guess child investigators make more than the, I mean, I don't know. But she said she was going to stay until she could leave. So then I knew she needed additional help. So my first thought was send her to EAP. And that's when I found out that we didn't have one. I was shocked. I just thought, how could a human services agency not have an EAP? And I had worked 10 or more years in EAPs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was well versed in what they do and how really cost effective they are, how they really can help people and they help the organization as well. And I didn't know what to do. I knew that I had to find a resource for these employees who needed additional assistance.
Excellent. You started researching. What'd you find doing your research?
I tell you, I try to find data. I wanted to know how prevalent was STS in our agency. I mean, I know that statistics always say 50%. I didn't know how much we had in our agency, but I couldn't find anything directly saying what our level of STS was. Your department, Training and Development, had done a survey, and you were trying to find the most wanted areas of future trainings. I found that the number one training that the employees wanted across all human services fields was secondary trauma and burnout.
Yes.
So I thought, if you have this many people and this is their number one training that they want, then that's telling me we do have a problem.
Yes. That's a great way to really provide some analysis, you know, looking at surveys, listening to people, having conversations. and also seeing where the gaps are. And one of the gaps was the fact that we did not have an adequate resource.
Well, at the time, that was a good resource. And there had been an employee satisfaction survey, but it was like 2 or 3 years old. And okay. If we have like our people are leaving every 2 years.
Yes.
So half our workforce is already gone. So I didn't think that was going to be, I could still see her face. I still remember the case. And that's like 5 years ago. And I just thought, we have to get an EAP.
Talk a little bit about the EAP. Talk a little bit about that process where you imagined a better way to support our workforce and what you actually found.
Well, for me, like I said, I was familiar with EAPs and their costs and how they benefit employees, but I was from Pennsylvania, so I really didn't know the EAPs down in South Carolina. So I met with some of my team members, Wanda Nunn and Terry Thompson, who are both here in Richland. And you know, we discussed EAPs, and they said, we absolutely do need EAP. And they said, they're experiencing all of these high levels of stress and trauma, and we don't have a resource for them. I thought the whole state of South Carolina didn't have EAPs, but Wanda told me that other state agencies do have EAPs.
Okay.
So she gave me a list of all the names of the other state agencies that she was aware of, because she had been in private practice, and gave me the names of all these EAPs. So then that's where I started researching all the EAPs, calling the companies, talking to their customer service people, trying to see what services they provide, what their cost was. Did a whole proposal to my boss and said, we have to have an EAP. He took it to people above him, but at that time, we were transitioning. The agency didn't have a state director, and so I'm not really sure who he took it to, but he came back and he said, budget doesn't allow, and he says, we have to bring it back another time. We'll revisit it at another time, is what I was told.
Well, I think during your research, and you and I have talked about this, you really determined that due to the high turnover rate, EAPs actually can pay for themselves.
My goodness, yes. And not just us with child welfare and turnover, but in any agency, they say that it lowers absenteeism, it lowers your accident rate, it improves productivity. You're helping employees. And so by doing that, you're creating a good work environment. They say, just like for a normal agency, and I think it's the Department of Labor said, that for every dollar spent on an EAP, the employer is going to save anywhere from $5 to $16. And I guess it depends on different agencies.
Sure.
But for me, just with our turnover costs, if it could lower our turnover, to me, it's a win-win for everybody, because it's a win for the employees, the children, the families we serve, and then it's for good for the bottom line. My focus is helping the employees, because I know by helping them, we are helping the people we serve, and we have to.
Yeah, you're helping the people that we serve. You're helping the employees' families as well, because they are remaining whole because of the help and the assistance that they're receiving from the EAP. Our bottom line is certainly from a human perspective, our human capital, our workforce, they're the greatest assets that we have. But also there's a fiscal aspect of this. And I've been in training for a couple of decades now, and the turnover rate is pretty evident when you see that your classes are remaining, you know, the capacity is remaining full each time you have a cohort. So if you start adding up those dollars, you can see from a fiscal perspective that having a quality EAP really does help the fiscal bottom line as well as help our workforce.
Yes.
I'm elated that you came along. I'm elated that you have imagined a better way to support our workforce.
Well, I'm thankful that Director Leach came along.
So I think all of us are.
He was receptive, and he knew our pain. Like the very first day he came, his very first day, we were having one of our refresher courses for the trauma response team. So he came over and took time to talk to my group of trauma response team members.
Yes.
And I thought, my goodness, this is his very first day on the job. How could he possibly have time? And he listened. He talked with us. He didn't talk to us. And I just thought, this is going to help. This is going to take us to a better place. And I was very thankful that he took the time. It just showed you his character and what he's about.
Yes. So I'm pretty sure you had conversations with Director Leach and I'm of that same mindset. I'm just so very thankful that he's here with us. He's been, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, one of the better directors that the state has ever had for all state agencies, because he does care, puts his heart out there, and he shows his compassion for people. What was that conversation like when you talked with him, or when you discussed with him the need for the EAP?
Well, to tell you the truth, after I got turned down the first time, everything costs money. Mm-hmm. And I, like you said, fiscal responsibility. And I thought he was a new director, and I thought probably half our departments are going after him for money. I only asked him if I could do an employee survey mm-hmm. on secondary trauma, intent to leave or turnover, on stress in general, like an employee survey to see how prevalent it is in our agency and to look at our agency, because like he was aware of secondary trauma and okay. trauma. So he was for the survey.
Excellent.
Thankfully. And so he allowed me to do the survey. And then the results came in and they showed the secondary trauma was high and stress, the stress in general was high. Mm-hmm. So when you combine regular stress, like stress is like too much work, not enough time, mm-hmm. have to be here, have to be there. That's normal stress that leads to burnout. But when you have secondary trauma and you compound that with stress, and like when we're saying, I got to be here, I got to be there, I got too much work, not enough time, we're talking about these are people dealing with children's lives.
Yes.
It's not stress like a normal everyday person's stress. The numbers were high and the numbers for intent to turnover were very high. That meant we had a workforce with a lot of trauma and a workforce who had high numbers of wanting to leave the agency. And then the COVID came. So
yes.
then I remember presenting to him and you know, the leadership team the results of the survey. And I can remember I was sitting in my bedroom because it was COVID. And I said, normally you make action plans to try to correct whatever we find. And I said, if I could have one thing, it has to be an EAP.
Yeah.
We have to address this. And it is fiscal responsibility. I mean, it pays for itself. He was receptive to it.
That is fantastic. And I wouldn't expect anything other than a receptive yes. to it because of the person that I've learned that he is.
Yes.
Just a great person, great human being.
We're
just
so absolutely.
Thankful and blessed to have him here in South Carolina.
We are. I agree.
Yes.
I absolutely agree.
Let's shift a little bit more. So you talked about how you imagined turning those imaginative thoughts into ideas before implementation. How did you transition from your thoughts about a quality employee assistance program for the South Carolina Department of Social Services to crafting ideas of a better way to support our colleagues in the agency through the EAP? How did you come up with that?
Like I said, I had worked in EAPs before, but it wasn't child welfare or human services, so it wasn't as extreme.
Mm-hmm. But
I knew that what services are needed. And I knew, like, we always talk about scope of work when we're going to contract with somebody. And so I knew what the averages were. The average EAP will give you 3 counseling sessions per year. The average EAP will give you services for you and your dependents. That's like basic what everybody gives you.
Okay.
And I knew for me in child welfare, that just was not enough.
Right.
I knew I did a lot of SHRM researching to see what SHRM comes up with. That's my
right.
go-to people. There are EAPs that give 6 counseling sessions per year, but it's not per year, it's per issue.
Mm.
And that is so needed in our agency because say I have a death in the family, so I need to go for grief.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm having a lot of stress at work, at some point in time, especially if I'm working in child welfare as a caseworker, I might have to go for secondary trauma or any depression or anxiety. So to me, it couldn't be a 1-6 session and then you're out. And I try to explain to everybody, it is 6 sessions per issue. You can go back as many times as you want, and you are entitled. And that's in our contract. It is 6 sessions per issue. And another thing that I researched is that I didn't know if it was possible or not, but I wanted our employees, all of our therapists are licensed therapists, and our EAP, Deer Oaks, is a nationwide EAP service, and they're excellent. But I wanted the therapists that our employees will be using, I wanted them to take our health insurance. This way, if an employee goes to EAP and they have their 6 free counseling sessions and say they build a really good rapport with this therapist and want to continue, well, then all they have to do is let them know that they want to continue and then switch over to their health insurance. Trying to provide as much counseling services for as long as we can, for as little payment for the employees to help them.
That is phenomenal. And thank you for that. And thank you for the thought that you put into finding something that's conducive for the work that we do. Because if you think about it, you know, average caseload size may be between 14, 15 families and youth and children. How many times will someone experience secondary trauma or PTSD when dealing with that many families and children at any one given time? And now they have an opportunity to have six sessions per issue.
Yes.
And they're not one and done. And after that, they're able to tap into their insurance to keep those sessions going for themselves, not for the children or youth, but for them. And that's powerful. For all of our workforce, I want to thank you and give you a big virtual hug for really putting this in place for us. And I know that, you know, utilization has been through the roof since you brought this.
Oh, it has. I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm very excited about it. Our first year was 17.03%, I think. And I think the average is like 5.5.
Wow, and we were at 17%.
Yeah. And every time they send me my statistics every quarter, they'll say like, you know, Sue, what are you doing? You know, because I keep saying, send me more posters, send me more pamphlets and brochures. And they said, sure, you know, your response, your utilization is so high. Slow down a little bit, you know? And I said, this is child welfare, human services. I'm not going to slow down. Yeah. I mean, to me, that I want that to keep going higher. So now we're on our second year. So we'll see how we do at the end of this year.
That's fantastic. And I think everyone else needs to catch up with us in terms of the work that we do and the need that we have. Because 17%, even though that may seem high to them, that's relatively low.
Right.
You know, so if we can kind of even those odds to get that utilization up even higher, I think that will benefit retention with staff and permanency with the children and youth and families that we work with.
Right. And then when we do our debriefings and we identify people who need additional assistance, we have that. We have a place to send them so that we know this is going to help you to get back. And we always say it gets you back to your like your ultimate level. Because when you are suffering from secondary trauma, you're at low capacity. And the goal is to get you back to your normal functioning. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, for yourself, but also providing that stable environment, for, again, for those that we serve. Because a lot of the children that we deal with, a lot of the youth, they do not have stable or come from stable environments. And the one stable feature in their lives could be that case manager.
Absolutely.
So the best that we can care for our case managers and keep them in the lives of our children and youth and that continuity, the better outcomes we're going to have. Kudos again to you for that. So let's shift a little bit one more time. We talked about imagining a different way to do things and the ideas that you put in place to bring about our EAP and linking that with our healthcare, our insurance. Let's talk a little bit about innovation. In everything that we do within human services, implementation is truly where the rubber meets the road. What went into implementing and measuring the effectiveness of our current EAP?
We did a tremendous amount of marketing, sending out flyers and posters. I gave presentations to every county office more than once. I went to regional offices, any group of people who would listen to me. Okay. I was out there talking. Plus, we were still at the phase where we were doing things virtually. So I was able to give like 3 or 4 EAP presentations to one office. Like I could do it Monday at 3 and Tuesday at 5. So I was able to be as flexible as the offices wanted. We have evening shifts also. So I did a number of presentations and I try to help them to understand all the benefits that they have. And then I was sending out flyers and posters. I went and I told my boss that we have large offices like Charleston, Richland, who have like over 200 employees.
Yes.
So I thought to make use of my time, and this is when we were easing up on the COVID, I went to all the largest offices in the state and brought out refreshments and prizes and gifts and EAP stuff and literature. But I also talked to them briefly, about 5 or 10 minutes about EAP, the benefits. I want them to understand how it could be for anyone in their household. It's not, you don't have to be related. It's not just you. It's not just your dependents. It's for anyone who lives in your homes. That was another thing that I really fought for because a lot of people have partners and they're not married. These people have roommates. And so I thought when you're living with someone, you need, if they're having issues, that will impact you.
Yes.
So I was really wanted people to know that it's for everyone. And so then we had contests and we gave out about, I'd say about 900 EAP t-shirts.
Yes, you know, you did. Thank you.
I just love it.
My t-shirt.
When I would go out to the office and I see somebody wearing one of those t-shirts, I always raise my arm. there were like 900 billboards walking around. So,
that's right.
So the more t-shirts and the more EAP gifts and things like that, it started to do EAP welcome packets. And we would send them to all the offices, to the HRLs, mm-hmm. our human resources liaisons. And so when a new employee came on board, they can give them that packet with, it would have a gift and the literature and a stress ball and different things just to, you know, let them know that EAP is here. We care about you and to please, you know, contact us if you need anything.
That is awesome. That is tremendous. And I do love my t-shirt. I wear it often.
I like mine too.
It's very, very comfortable. I'm often asked, what is EAP? And that gives me an opportunity to share what we're doing at our agency and how it's really benefiting us as a state agency here in South Carolina. So Dr. Meyer, you provided us with a wealth of information, how critical and innovative thinking can have a tremendous impact, not only on the work that we do, but also an impact on our mental health as we work with those in crisis on a daily basis.
Yes.
What's next on your quest to help our workforce? What's in Sue Meyer's brain about how to enhance what you're currently doing?
Well, I'll tell you, I was so thrilled that Dr. Kapal came on last podcast on mindfulness because I am a huge proponent of mindfulness. My family, my grandchildren, they're so sick of hearing me talk about mindfulness. But I keep telling them it'll help
you. Mine as well.
It'll help you with school. It'll help you here. It'll help you with relationships. And I can't say enough about it. This morning, I did two mindful sessions because I knew I was coming here today. That's a big one. Took some courses through UCLA recently.
Okay.
They have that MARC Center, that's Mindfulness Research Center. Looked at the research, studied the research. I know all about it, but I really don't know how to do it for me personally. But I want to be able to, and I'm just throwing this out there, whoever listens, I would love for us to become a mindful organization.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Because you know what? It will build such resiliency for our employees against secondary trauma. I so strongly believe in this. I don't want to say it's a miracle. If you would read the research, like the neuroscience research about how the brain changes when someone does mindful meditation, it is so amazing to me. It shows you how mindfulness changes your brain and how areas such as decision-making, relationships, compassion, it's in all our good areas. So it helps us to be a better person, to be able to relate better to others. It helps us to stop and pay attention to the moment. When you have like 100 things running through your head, you can't make a decision. You can't be creative. I mean, your mind is so overflowing. And so once you learn, and the more you do it, I mean, it's difficult in the beginning. But please, everyone, try it and keep trying it. It's like a muscle. You have to continue to work at it. Yes. Like they say, mindfulness is like exercise for the brain, like physical exercises for your body. And the more you do it, it will help you. And so I try to incorporate that in all the things that I do with employees. And the second thing is, which was a big thing for me too, is the EAP is my baby. I want it to be better. Quality improvement, CQI, better, better, better.
Yes.
I always tell employees, please call me if you're not happy with your therapist, if they make you wait too long for a response, something you don't like. I tell people, please call me. One of the last times I did it, I said, please call me so many times. I swear to you, I'm not lonely. Because it's not like I was this lonely person who wants people to call. I just want people to please contact me. And those contacts would help me to improve our EAP. Through the year, I collected all the things people called about. And then Shanika McDaniel Oliver and Glenise Elmore and Daniel Covey, we all got together because we were part of the first team who contracted for the EAP.
Okay.
And we laid it out, all the things that come to our attention. They provide a really good service. Mm-hmm. I mean, a great service. But it was just a few little things that they interpreted certain parts of the contract differently than, say, Glenise and I did.
Sure.
And so it was just a meeting to kind of work that out. And now we have not had one complaint since we met with them. There wasn't like bombardment. I tried to explain to them, if it's just one person, like a woman who called who was, she lost her husband. Mm-hmm. And they made her wait 5 days to get a therapist. Uh-huh. Now, to me, that one case, I know it was a holiday weekend and they had reasons for it. That was one time I want the best. And they are excellent. And they have proven to above and beyond what we could ask for. So I'm so thankful to them. and the services they are providing us. I mean, it's exceptional now.
That is fantastic. And you just really nailed something that I'm passionate about, and that's having the best of the best for our workforce. We do so much hard work each and every day. We lay it on the line each and every day as first responders in our own right.
Yes.
In many instances, we're given secondhand materials, secondhand buildings to be housed in, and those types of things. And we've got to get away from that, because we truly are part of the solution for society's problems that they bring to us in volumes each and every day. And we should treat those of us that work in this profession a lot better than we do. And this EAP program is a way to do that. As you're talking, I'm thinking about the way that this agency is being transformed right in front of us. In an earlier episode, I had my friend Lou Rogers come on and talk about coach approach and the coaching model that he's leading the charge in implementing statewide. And we have our practice model in place that Josie Jones kind of led and spearheaded. Now we have an EAP program that is pushing for it to be second to none, along with the improvements in practice that our deputies are really leading the charge in under the leadership of our director, Mike Leach. I'm just seeing a true transition within the South Carolina Department of Social Services, an agency that I've been around just about my entire professional career. And it is a beautiful, beautiful picture, a mosaic, so to speak, that I'm seeing. You're an integral part of that. So I would say, please continue doing what you're doing. And we're here to assist you however we can to ensure that this is sustainable, but it also is enhanced in areas where it needs to be enhanced.
I agree. Like I said, I remember the first day that Director Leach started. When I came here, not just the EAP, but there was a number of different things that I saw from working in the field in other agencies. This kind of like stood out to me. Like, this shouldn't be. Almost all the things that I had issue with when I came been corrected. I am thrilled to be part of all of this, to see growth, the progress. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Lou Rogers, the main things they talk about with secondary trauma is the supervisors and the supervision that they give to their employees, like reflective supervision, helping them to understand on a regular basis. That's phenomenal. I'm just thrilled. Very thankful.
It's major. This episode really dovetails with previous episode with Dr. Ketpal.
Yes.
When she brought about mindfulness. And I think as we go into the holidays here in 2023, this is one of the things that I wanted to bring to the i3 podcast, having you and Dr. Ketpal really share your hearts, share your expertise, and provide these resources for our workforce, because we know that emotions run the gamut through the holiday season.
Yes.
For those listening, take note to the resources and the skills that these two professionals have brought to you over the past two episodes, because they could be very helpful in helping you to mitigate any challenges that you may have during the holidays, but also throughout the year as well. Dr. Meyer, I'm certainly thankful that you took the time out of the day to share with us. Are there any lasting thoughts that you want to share with the audience?
Well, since you were talking about mindfulness, one more little flip for the mindfulness. EAP does offer the Aware Mindfulness Program, and it's six sessions.
Okay.
And our employees can call, and then they will, over the phone, but they get six sessions, and each one gives them a different instructions on mindfulness, eating, meditate mindfulness, or walking mindfulness. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ones, and but it's good to have. And I'll tell you, just to put a plug in for eating mindfulness, people who try to lose weight, eating mindfulness has proven to really help in reduction in weight.
Now, those sessions are for our family members as well, correct?
Or yes, those that it's we live for with. Every and anyone in your household.
Okay.
And so please, I mean, honestly, it's like anything. You can't just have those six sessions and then you honestly have to do it daily. Like with exercise, you got to do it at least 20 minutes a day. But I'm telling you, you will build up your brain in such a way. If I could show you those slides, the MRIs.
Well, my friend, listen, thank you, first and foremost. Thank you so much for who you are as a person, but also as a professional. Thank you for taking time out of your day to share this great information with us today. I will be inviting you back.
That's fine.
I will be inviting you back to have some more conversations about how we can enhance our workforce and be a better agency not only for those that we serve, but also for one another. We appreciate you, and we're here for you to assist you in whatever way that we possibly can.
I appreciate that. And I do appreciate you because you were a big part of a lot of those changes that came about. And so I'm thankful for you also.
Well, bless you for that. And we're just honored to be able to be in this position to serve.
I am too. That's, yes. That's what it's all about.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You do as well.
Thank you for joining us today on our i3 podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please follow and subscribe to the show. And until next time, remember to make time during the day to imagine the possibilities of how you can improve the work that you do. Write down your ideas so that they become goals to strive for. And lastly, begin to engage in critical thinking about how you can implement your ideas through groundbreaking, innovative ways as we work together to improve the world in which we live.